A sharp pain in the chest, a feeling of tightness, pressure, or your chest being squeezed. These are some of the symptoms of angina pectoris, usually just referred to as angina. The Latin and Greek words from which the term is derived can be translated as a strangling feeling in the chest. It's caused by a reduced or insufficient blood flow to the heart. As a symptom of several cardiovascular diseases, including coronary artery diseases, which affect over 250 million people worldwide, angina is fairly common. However, there remain gaps in the diagnostic process, in part due to the challenges for healthcare providers in recognizing and diagnosing the condition, the various symptoms patients present with, and also the difficulty for patients to correctly identify symptoms and seek medical care. I'm Shreya Shrikhande, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sean Taylor, today to speak to two patients who were diagnosed with angina to hear their experiences from the symptoms to the post-diagnosis recovery.
Thank you, Shreya. We are delighted to welcome Maria George and Chandranuman Ghosh to this World Heart podcast on angina, the patient stories.
Angina symptoms are not limited only to chest pain, but can be varied, especially between men and women. And the onset can also be sudden or gradual. We want to hear from you what your symptoms were and the events leading up to your angina episode. So if we can start with you, Maria.
First of all, thank you for inviting me. To be honest, when I first experienced the symptoms, I had no idea it was heart-related at all. And it's only looking back now that I can recognise some of the very earliest episodes of it. The first time I had symptoms was right after a shower, and I felt very unwell very quickly. But to be honest, I just thought the shower was too hot. We're very good as women at putting things off and just saying, oh, that's nothing. And that's exactly what I did. It was completely out of the blue, but I didn't have the heart attack symptoms that we see on the movies. I wasn't clutching my chest. I wasn't dropping to the floor. I wasn't screaming in pain. I just felt incredibly unwell, very fast, and needed to sit down really quickly. And the best way I can describe it is to say it felt like somebody had taken a plug out of the bottom of my body, out of my feet, and my energy just went straight to the floor. So I felt very unwell very quickly, but didn't associate it with a heart attack or a heart problem at all. And I think that's the case for many.
At what point did you know this had something to do with your heart?
To be fair, not for a while in a confirmed way. It happened a couple of times and it got much worse. And I went to my GP. My GP's been wonderful since the outset. She actually immediately did the regular tests that the GP surgery would do and said my ECG didn't look great. So she was going to refer me to the rapid access chest pain clinic. But before I even got for that, I was at the A&E with very severe chest pain, very severe pain in the middle of my back. And that has been a key for me. It's always been mainly in the middle of my shoulder blades. So when I went in, I complained of really bad pain in my back. I still didn't think it was a heart attack until the cardiologist came along and said, you've had a heart attack. And I could have fallen off the bed, quite frankly. I just said, no way. And he said, yeah. And they referred me for an angiogram the very same day. So the process and procedure was fantastic. But I was still denying it. Even at that point, I was sure I hadn't had a heart attack because I didn't feel like I was desperately in chest pain or anything like that.
That's incredible. And for you, Chandrama, was it a similar process or did something else happen?
Kind of similar, but I think mine was a bit different and more aggressive. So it started, like, as Maria said, out of nowhere. So one fine day, like, it actually started a little bit of chest pain, but I didn't realize that it is chest pain coming from my heart. And for me, it was like so funny. It started like when in Australia, it's really cold, like May, June, July. And I used to go to the bathroom, like toilet, and it was always early morning, like between 5 to 8 a.m. always. And I was like, I feel like everything is like there's a crushing, squeezing chest pain and everything is cramping inside of me. Like, you know, I sometimes used to just like hunch over and just like hold myself thinking it's too cold. It is too cold. And then I turn on the heater, put some blanket on, but then my body was like so weak and dizzy, like I didn't even have the energy to even move. And one morning, I went to the toilet and I just fainted. So I fainted in the bathroom for, don't know, for how many seconds or minutes. And I just lay down over there. And then when I opened my eyes, I just found myself on the floor and I could barely lift myself up because I was so dizzy and I was like exhausted. So I was trying to hold the sink and lift myself up and go to the bed. And I went to bed, I lied down for a few hours. Even then, I didn't realize I have to call an ambulance to go to a hospital. Rather, I said to a friend, can you take me to a GP, please? I fainted. And I went to the GP. He just said, well, I don't know, maybe it's a syncope, but we'll do some blood test. And it was a weird blood test. Like, he tested me for D-dimer, which is a blood test for, normally it says for blood clots, but it was very high. It was very elevated. And he thought there must be a bad blood clot. And I went to the ER, the same process in ER, but my ECG, nothing was wrong. Like, nothing showed up that I've got a heart disease. They did the normal process in the ER and they said, no, you're fine. There's nothing, you know, blood clots. You can go home. And this process repeated, like it just like went on and on for me. I have changed several GPs. No one referred me to a cardiologist. The ER just left me just like that to just keep fainting, staying in my house by myself alone. It has been a really terrifying journey before I got a diagnosis finally.
Yeah, that sounds particularly frightening, Chandrima, and a really difficult process to go through when you don't have answers and you don't know exactly what's going on. What was the point at which you then got those answers and were told that you have angina, and what were the processes that that you went through?
Yeah, so that was another incident, this time in a shopping center. And when I passed out, it was really bad. I just fell on the floor all of a sudden, like I was trying to buy something. And there were people all around me, like with blankets, paramedics, everyone. And thankfully, there was a nurse sitting next to me. It, just by chance, she was also shopping. And she just said, like, it doesn't match up that your doctor's telling you it's a panic attack and anxiety. It doesn't really match up. My heart was racing and it was like 15 minutes like that. I was just staying on the floor, lying on the floor, didn't open my eyes. So the nurse, when the paramedics came, the nurse really pushed for more investigation. And she said, this is not right. Like, she being in and out of the ER, but this doesn't look like a panic attack. So that was really good. And so the note that the paramedics wrote in the ER gave me a little bit of push. But after that, even after doing the normal procedure, blood test, ECG, nothing was there. And they were about to leave me as usual, saying you can go home. But this time I was literally afraid of coming back home by myself. So I said, look, I'm really not happy with what you are doing with me. And if you can't help me, just point me to a right direction where I can get some help. And then the doctor said to me, okay, well, we will get you a senior doctor next morning. So you just stay here for the night. And that's when it started. So I saw a cardiologist next morning. He wasn't even sure whether it's from the heart or it's from the nerve. So he said it can be either or. But he wanted to try with the heart. So he put me on a heart bug monitor for 28 days. And in 5 days, I had a cardiac arrest and the heart bug picked up. And I went to VT. I was dead for 25 seconds in my house. And then the hospital found out, they called me and said, are you okay? You have to just come back, come to the hospital. It's not safe for you to stay at home. So that was my journey when they actually found out that it's a heart problem.
it's an incredible journey with a lot of challenges along the way and a lot of terrifying moments, I'm sure. But once you finally then had that diagnosis, how much did your life change by having that information and then being able to put on the right treatment?
Since then, I have had a few different procedures to check what exactly is the what is exactly going on with my heart. So I have got vasospastic angina, which is not typical angina, but it is more of a non-obstructive coronary artery disease, and it happens when the arteries squeezes, it spasms, and the blood doesn't flow through my body and my brain, and hence obviously I was fainting. And so after the diagnosis, and because my case was so aggressive, they had to do a surgery. So I have got an implanted defibrillator because my heart rhythm was crazy. And since then, I have been in and out of the hospital a few times because with severe chest pain, because my medication wasn't the right combination. So a few times I have to be there for them to do a trial and error with my medication to find the right mix for me. So now, even though it is not 100% gone, but I have got a combination which is at least working for me, but it is very tricky to handle this condition and to manage it every day.
Definitely. Maybe Maria, just to come to you to hear about a little more about your experience going through the healthcare system. You told us a little bit about your experience with getting diagnosed and the test that you underwent, but following on from that, how did the initiation of treatment go and how were your experiences following on from that?
Yes, certainly. It's actually a bit deceiving because I didn't actually get diagnosed. They took me for the angiogram, and surprisingly, the doctor came to me after and said, "Your arteries are completely clear. You don't have any heart problem at all. You can go home." And I was delighted. Absolutely delighted. Went home sort of very happy with my little self and thinking, knew it wasn't a heart attack. I was sure it wasn't a heart attack because that's not what I'd been led to believe how it happened. There was not that chest pain. So I was confused, but happy and relieved and went home. But then out of the blue, suddenly massive chest pain a few days later, huge chest pain, dropped to the floor, really bad. Phoned the ambulance, went to A&E. First time ever I've been to A&E in my life. And they did all the testing and said, "Well, no, you had a clear angiogram, so you can't possibly have anything wrong with your heart." I said, "Well, what is it then? It's driving me crazy. There must be something." I mean, the frustrating thing about it, which I'm hoping will resonate with other people who hear this, is it came massively like a freight train and hit my chest, but then it disappeared just as quickly. So by the time I was sat comfortably in the A&E, they said, "Are you all right?" I said, "I'm absolutely fine now. I have no symptoms at all now," which is really frustrating, not just for me, but for them too. So the journey of it for me and for anybody who's got unobstructed coronary artery disease was hellish, really, because you not only have the problem of this condition that nobody seems to understand and recognise, or very few, when you get into the A&E or GP scenario, the testing, the actual mechanics, the machines that they use don't recognise and don't pick up this type of angina. So it's taken quite a lot of years, a lot of development, a lot of science to actually get the mechanism, the CMRIs and the big machines that will diagnose it. But you have to find a doctor first who understands it and who recognises that you've got it and who will refer you to the right cardiologist. And for me, that was myself and my GP researching online, thank goodness for the internet. And we found a professor in London. Bear in mind, by the way, I'm going back more than 20 years here, so this is not recent for me. So we found a professor, Professor Caskey in London, who was an expert in this. I wrote to him and he said, "Come straight away." And as soon as I saw him and I told him the symptoms, he said, "You've got coronary artery spasm," which is vasospasm, as it's sometimes known now. From that, however, progressed. So over the 20 years for me, I started with the freight train, coronary artery spasm, but really found it difficult at places like A&E, and I know a lot of patients still do, because it's still someone to recognise, so people are still getting sent home. But then that progressed for me to have two massive attacks years later, and that then started off the coronary microvascular dysfunction and endothelial. So it's a little bit of a triage for me, as in a trio of things that I have. But again, like Chandrima, the journey to get diagnosed was awful. And actually, it was 7 years before I was even given my very first medication for a heart problem. And it was after that, of course, that I got to Professor Caskey. And of course, since then, management's been wonderful. But I think it's fair to say angina doesn't always present the way you think it will. And that doesn't make it any less important. But I think it's also fair to say it's very difficult to find the right treatment, but it still needs tweaking. I'm 20 odd years on from that, and I still have coronary artery spasm, microvascular dysfunction and angina and endothelial dysfunction. And it affects your life hugely, you know. And because it's not recognised, the actual risk to you as a patient is higher than the usual coronary artery disease. Because, of course, you don't have those protective elements in place. If you have a heart attack, as the cardiologist said to me at the time, you would get the referrals on, you would get the treatment, you would get the care, you would get the cardiac rehab. But you don't get that if you're an ANOCA patient unless you've got a very understanding doctor. So very difficult journey. And, of course, you live with that angina. The freight train is the hard chest pain that hits you like a brick. But the microvascular dysfunction, for me at least, and I know for many others, is this constant undercurrent of chest pain that just waves up and down. Your whole day is a mess. It can be medicated to a degree and it can be managed to a degree. But as I'm sure Chandrima would agree, it changes your life. There's no doubt about it. And it certainly changes your independence.
Wow. So two patients and two such different stories from the diagnosis and the symptoms. And Maria, you said already that it took you 7 years to get your diagnosis. So I'd like to ask you, Chandrima, what was your timeline? How long before your first symptoms did you got a confirmed diagnosis?
So mine was a few months, maybe like 4 months. But before that, in spite of being such like aggressive symptoms, I don't know how I survived these 4 months, like living with anti-anxiety pills, and which I think was making my condition worse. And yeah, so it's not that long as Maria, because I would have been probably dead by then. Yeah, so a few months for me.
And after the diagnosis, what did the recovery process look like? I mean, if you can even call it recovery, but just the management of the symptoms.
Yeah, so that's a good question. Well, it is actually, there is no recovery, I think, with angina patients. So the term recovery doesn't go with us. I think it is more of management and like controlling your symptoms with medication, lifestyle changes, and whatever you know will trigger your condition. So just like, you know, manage them as much as you can. So for me, obviously stress, anxiety and cold weather is, it's really no good for me. And also sometimes exertion. So exertion means not only doing things like, for example, vacuuming, but also if I talk too much, like, for example, talking on the phone for a long period of time, it'll give me chest pain. And there is a chronic fatigue, like, all the time, every day, and it just, like, never goes away. So for me, I think I have to pace myself really well. And, yeah, so I feel like I live a life of probably 70 years old, 60 year old people now, but it is what it is. So have accepted the fact. Yeah.
Coming to you, Maria, it's very interesting about the triggers that Chandrima just mentioned. Do you also have triggers such as that?
Absolutely. I agree with everything Chandrima said. And actually, it's good to hear that from another patient's perspective, because the triggers can be ridiculous, some of them. I remember many moons ago, Professor Caskey saying to me, emotion, high emotion. He said, don't watch scary films. And I sort of frowned and said, scary films? And he said, It doesn't have to be bad emotion, even good emotion. Don't go to a wedding unless you can sit in the background. Don't get excited. Don't get happy. And I actually said a phrase that stuck with me for a long time. I felt like I lived my life in beige. I couldn't get happy. I couldn't get excited. I couldn't get sad. I couldn't get stressed. I couldn't get unhappy. I couldn't get sort of frustrated. So every single occasion where that might even possibly remotely happen, I had to back away from. And I was used to, I mean, I was already disabled from years ago from when I had my son. So that was a huge adjustment. So I use a wheelchair a lot. But it didn't take away from the fact that this was like a grieving process. And I think that's the same for many angina patients, because you're grieving for a life that you expected to have, and now suddenly you don't have it. One of the big things for me, and it's an ongoing thing, is travel. I can't travel alone, and that really upsets me. You know, I have to have somebody with me, and it's not about keeping me company by far. It's about doing the practical things. Hot water bottle, I need a hot water bottle at my back all the time. I've even got one today, you know. And it's not because my back's sore, it's because the back of my heart, when it's warmed, is less symptomatic. And if it starts to kick off, that can sort of null it fine. GTN sprays, this is a good one. I'm sure Chandrina finds this. I have one in every single room in my house. Every room has one. My car has one. My son's car has one. His house has one. In my handbag, I have one. You cannot be in a situation where your triggers happen and your symptoms skyrocket, because if you don't and can't stop them at stage one, if they get to stage 10, you're in A&E. You can't stop them, or it's extremely hard to. And I think living with that new normal of constantly living like a 96-year-old, you can prepare for something like this. You know, you can rest before, you can medicate highly before, you can prepare and do this. But it's often a case, and again, I'll ask Chandrina the same, it's not in the moment that you suffer. It's afterwards. And I couldn't even contemplate cardiac rehab because I wouldn't get, we know this from experience, but I don't get past the first episode, because people with an unobstructed coronary artery disease can't do cardiac rehab. They need a tailored rehab session that's very slow and massive long warm up. So on the day you might do it, the day after it might take you 2 or 3 days to recover, or you might go completely off a cliff edge and be totally debilitated on the sofa. So it's the unseen things, certainly in our type of angina, it's the unseen debilitating lifestyle changes that you have to make. And that means losing friends too, you know. People aren't wanting to invite you if you have to say, I'll come if I can, or I'll do my best. You know, if somebody can't rely on you, you certainly can't work, because I don't know how I am from 1 minute to the next, but you obviously can't have long-time, reliable, good relationships if you don't know if you're even going to be available, let alone whether you're going to be sitting up or lying down in bed. So huge changes, but most of them unseen, and I think that's what makes it really hard.
Living life in beige is such a powerful statement that you just made. And Chandram, I'd like to hear a little bit about you on the preventive steps that you have taken, or how your lifestyle or quality of life has changed.
So I think like living with a chronic disease, things have changed a lot for me. And now I have accepted the fact that, you know, I have to do things which is in my control, like which I can really do, and not like commit to like big things in life. Like, for example, one of the things would be travel, as Maria said. I haven't, because my condition, my diagnosis has been quite recent, so I haven't traveled since then. But how my life changed is, along with the heart disease, I have developed post-traumatic stress disorder. And my mental health and anxiety issues have just like gone off the roof, like since I have been diagnosed with this heart condition. And even now, like it's been 2 years now, but I live with constant fear every day. This fear is that, like, what if my medication doesn't work? And it comes with the chest pain. And obviously, as Maria said, I have the GTN with me all the time. But what if it doesn't go away? What if I again have to call an ambulance, which I hate? I hate going to the ERs. I'm just over it. I get anxiety getting in the ER now. So just living with this constant pain, and I just like think to myself, well, you know, why am I living? Like, why is this life? What is this life for? Well, I could have been easily, I mean, I was dead. Like, why did I wake up even? So all these negative thoughts come in my mind. And it kind of sometimes affects my health. So because that also gives me chest pain because I'm stressed too much. But then it is like more of, as I said, like, you know, accepting yourself as it is. So we always go through, patients with angina go through anxiety, depression, social isolation. But, you know, I think we can only control and manage them with our proper medication regime, follow the right treatment, go for the doctor's appointment, and and just like, I think also empowering other patients, like talking to others, getting information. This group on Facebook, the Microvascular and Heart Health, have really helped me and supported me understanding my symptoms and also giving me that confidence that, you know, I'm not crazy and I'm not like talking weird. It is what it is right now, living with a chronic condition.
I think those are both incredibly striking stories, and thank you both to sharing all of your experiences with us. It's clearly a condition that pervades all aspects of life, and the chronic ongoing emotional impact, I think, must be truly difficult to live with. So thank you for telling us about that. One question, because you both mentioned the importance of sharing experiences and support groups and organizations that can help people with angina. Could you both give a message or piece of advice to our listeners about recognizing angina symptoms and then acting on those symptoms?
First of all, patients, especially with this form of angina, are often told it's all in your head. Or it doesn't exist, or there's no such thing. They treat it like a religion where they either believe in it or they don't. It's not a religion. It's a heart condition. It's under-recognized. It's not rare. It's not benign. If you have this condition, remember this, heart conditions don't always look the same. And they certainly don't always look like you see on the adverts for the British Heart Foundation or anywhere for that matter, where they clutch the chest and collapse in pain. It can be jaw pain, neck pain, jaw ache. It can be back pain. It can be arm pain. It can be anything. And I was once told by Professor Noberry Mayers that anything above the waist can be angina. So what I would say to anybody listening is, if you have a symptom above the waist that you think might be angina, or even if you just don't know what it is, please get checked out. And if you don't feel the answers you're getting are enough or are covering this, ask for referral. Ask for referral again if you need to, but don't give up, because at the end of the day, this is your life and your life matters.
Thank you, Maria. And I think, as you said, the variation of symptoms is particularly important. And Shrey mentioned earlier in the podcast that particularly variation between men and women is under-recognized, both between among the public and among health professionals. I think that's a particularly important message to consider with that in mind. And same question to you, Chandrima. What would be a message or piece of advice that you would give to our listeners about recognizing angina symptoms?
If you think heart disease is for old people with bad diets, smoking, so I would like to say that angina doesn't care who you are. It can strike anytime. It can come to young, old, healthy, unhealthy. It is like a ghost which will just creep in at any point of time. And it is, you know, it is all about, you know, just advocating for yourself, no matter how simple the symptoms or whatever pain you're going through, because as Maria and myself, we shared that even we didn't know that it is a heart condition. So whoever is listening to this podcast, I would say that, you know, advocate for yourself whenever you're with your doctor, and just talk from your heart, honestly, whatever you're going through. And don't wait for your heart to scream. Rather, listen to the whispers and take immediate and right action. Thank you.
Can I also add something there too, please, Sean? Please seek help, seek support. You know, there are peer support groups out there. There's lots on Facebook. We link to one in the microvascular that Chandrima was talking to. And if you want to look for symptoms and for how you can help yourself with any Inoka condition, look on the website, inokainternational.com. Please look for support. There is support out there.
Maria and Chandrima, you have provided us with such valuable insights into angina from the perspective of somebody who is living with it, right from your very different initial symptoms to your diagnosis and management journeys. We thank you so much for coming on to our podcast, sharing your experiences, and helping us raise awareness on angina.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We also thank our listeners who continue to tune in their numbers. Don't forget to share, and of course, tune in to more episodes on heart and health by going to World Heart Podcasts on all major platforms.